Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene Podcast. I'm Dave Hendon. Happy New Year to everybody. Of course, the first big tournament of 2019 is the Masters. It is one of the crown jewels of the game, without any doubt. And it takes place next week in Alexandra Palace in London. One of the contenders for the title is a former runner-up, Barry Hawkins, firmly established now as a member of the top eight. Always seems to come good at the Crucible every year at the World Championship. He's won three ranking titles. And he is also a thoroughly nice bloke, as you're about to hear. And by the way, stay tuned for later in the week. On Saturday, there'll be another podcast. It'll be a full Masters preview.
Barry, you always stop asking players how they discovered snooker. So what was your introduction?
Well, I used to live on a council estate when I was really young. A few of my friends started going down a local snooker club, which is only maybe 15-minute walk away. So I decided to go down there one evening after school, and I remember playing. And then as soon as I started playing, I knew then really that I loved the game, and it just went from there. Really, I just started going down to the snooker club and brushing tables, and just progressed from there.
And snooker was obviously real big on the TV then, wasn't it? So you would have seen a lot of it as well.
Yeah, definitely. Jimmy inspired me to play, and watching him in all them World Championships, you know, when he done well and lost all them finals. So, I remember breaking down in tears, I think, at one point when he missed the black. I think it was 17-all, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He missed the black.
You weren't alone in that.
No, exactly. I remember like, I was devastated. And I think I was down the snooker club at the time watching it. So, he was my favourite player growing up. And I think he probably inspired me to play snooker. Mm.
So how quickly did you sort of get good?
I don't know what to say, really.
A lot of kids take the game
up. Pretty quick,
up.
I think. Yeah. I mean, once I did start playing, he couldn't get me off the table. Mm. I was on it day and night as much as I could, really. Any in between school time, I was just at a snooker club. But I think within a couple of years, I was making centuries. I think I won the under-15s, and I think I started playing about back end of 11, 12. So at the time, winning the under-15 was a big event. You know, Hemsby and Pontins. There was so many great players, David Gray, Holty, all the players around my age, really. There was all around it. So, yeah, I think from then, I think that was when I decided, right, I'll give this a proper go. Mm.
And also at that time, there was quite a thriving junior circuit, wasn't there? So there was a lot of tournaments to play in.
Oh, it was huge. I was going to tournaments every weekend, junior tournaments all around the country. I think I got schooled very well, you know, back then, so playing tournaments week in, week out, and against class players. So, it was absolutely... It was amazing back then.
Mm. But I think I'm right in saying before you turned pro, you had quite an unusual thing for a snooker player, a job before turning pro. Is that right? You worked in an office?
No, I did. I give it up for a little while. And okay. I started working in an office, like an office clerk, really. Mm. And I did go for a couple of job interviews. And I remember going up Cannon Street and going for a office junior job, really, in a solicitor's. But it was going to progress me on to going to courses and stuff like that, and I only missed out by one person, I think.
Right.
So who knows, you know, it might have been totally different if I got that job. Mm. And someone persuaded me to come back, and I'll give it another go, and lucky for me it's worked out, you know.
Mm. But do you think you saw snooker as a career then? I mean, obviously you would have seen the stars making a lot of money, but also a lot of pros down the list then. There's quite a lot of pros on the tour who obviously weren't.
Yeah, no, I mean, back then it's a massive gamble, isn't it? Like anything you do. So, but I loved the game so much back then. I was so young, and all you wanted to do was play, and I loved it so much. So, I did miss it when I jacked it in for a while. And lucky for me, a couple of friends from the club rung me up and said, "Look, you've got to give it a go," you know, because I think they saw maybe I could do all right back then. So, but you never know. But yeah, it was a risk, but. If you want to do well at something, sometimes you've got to take the risk, haven't you? Mm.
So how did you find turning pro? Because it's changed a little bit sort of recently with Jason Ferguson, but back then you basically just turn up with your cue, don't you? There's no induction or anything, you just turn up, you start playing and you're a professional. But how did you find the sort of step up?
Yeah, I remember I had 1 year at Blackpool when at the time you could just pay money to turn professional, no matter what sort of standards you were. There was people playing with... There was people with disabilities playing back then. I remember a fella playing with one arm and he had like different instruments.
Graham Francis,
exactly. He was at Blackpool the year I was there. So, as long as you paid your money, it didn't really matter. And you had to get through maybe 7 or 8 rounds to maybe get to the venue. I think I've done okay. I think David Gray and someone called Alan Burnett back then, really, they were the two best players of that year, rookies of the year, if you like, and I think I've done the third best. So I've done all right out there. I didn't set the world alight, but I won a lot of matches. So I enjoyed every minute of it, to be fair. Maybe I enjoyed it a little bit too much. I was 17 and was at Blackpool in the summer at the time, so sneaked off to a couple of late night bars a few times, and it was good times, you know, looking back, good memories, yeah.
But was there a point where you thought, I suppose maybe it's getting a bit older, I've got to take this a bit more seriously?
Oh yeah, I mean, I learned from a very young age, really. If you abuse the game, then you get found out, and it never forgives you. Even nowadays, sometimes I go off the rails a tiny bit, not that much, but you know deep down you think I can't keep abusing it because it's going to come back and bite me in the bum, really. So back then you got to put the hours, and you get what you put in, you know. Mm.
But did you feel that you were improving? I mean, because looking back at your career, it maybe took a little while to establish yourself, but you were, I guess, learning on the job. And as you say, you were very young at the time.
Yeah, I mean, some players, they come in and make a massive impact and break through, you know, like obviously Ronnie's a special talent. But other players develop later, and I think I'm one of them players, you know. It took me a long time to know that you have to have a bit of belief in yourself. It just takes a long time to learn, really, sometimes, and get used to playing against the top players and in the big arenas and stuff like that. So, I think I've made steady progress all the time, and I think obviously started working with Terry Griffiths quite a number of years ago. Mm. That made a big difference as well. I think sometimes you just have to keep at it and just keep going, really, and see what happens.
Do you remember your first TV game?
I remember one of my first TV games. I think I played James Watana. Mm. I think it was the LG Cup back then. It was the last 16, and I got to the quarterfinals, actually. I think that was my first ever venue. Mm. I loved it, and I lost to Joe Swell, actually, 5-4, to get to the semis, and I think I might have been to play Ronnie, so that would have been a huge match for me. But yeah, I loved it. I loved playing at the venue. I can remember, definitely.
What was it like first on telly? You know, it's very different, isn't it? You've got the cameras, a lot more attention on you.
All eyes on you, yeah. It's more nerve-wracking. It's great when everything's going well, but the tough part is when you're not playing well and things are not going well. That's when you really need to dig deep, you know. That's the difference. It's all great when you're potting balls and everything's going your way. Mm. There's no problem at all, but it's just when you start things going bad against you, and you can get embarrassed out there sometimes, but you just have to keep trying to dig deep. That's the difficult part, yeah.
Because you know people are watching, particularly when you're starting out and your family be watching and everyone's wishing you well.
Yeah, you just feel like you're letting people down, not just yourself, you feel like you're letting others down, but I think I've had enough of them experiences now to know that it's just what it is, you know. Sometimes you just go out there and you can't perform, and other times it's great. But I do think, obviously I'm 39 now, so I'm no spring chicken, but I do think I'm able to bounce back a little bit better than I used to, definitely. Mm.
2005, you kind of broke through a little bit. You got to the semi-finals of the Welsh, and then later in the year the Grand Prix, and I think you played Ronnie in both of them, and they were both close.
I remember.
And that was kind of maybe your first taste of the real big time, getting to the business end of a big tournament.
Yeah, and against someone like him. I think at the time, if I remember rightly, I think there was only 6 tournaments then. So I think 2 semi-finals out of 6 tournaments that year, or 7 tournaments, whatever it was. I had a decent year, you know. But that was a big eye-opener, you know, playing against Ronnie, and different kind of pressure, and obviously packed crowd, and yeah, both times narrowly lost to him. I think I lost, did I use 6-4, I think one of them, and 5-4 and the other, maybe. But yeah, I thought maybe back then, obviously back then, I thought, right, I can do it against the very best, you know.
And then you made your Crucible debut 2006, you won the first frame against Ken.
Yeah,
it's all going well, and then you don't win another one. I mean, that was kind of welcome to the Crucible.
I remember. I've been trying for so long to. I kept getting beat to qualify for the Crucible. I've done well in other events, but that's the big one everyone wants to get to. And I remember I had a tough draw in qualifying. I beat Ding actually to qualify. I played very well against him. You know, it was a great game I had against Ding. I think not too long before that, he'd bashed me up, and I thought, oh my god, that's a really tough draw. You know, so to come through that, I felt. Great, and everyone was going, well, wait till you get to the Crucible. It's an eye opener. It's a different kettle of fish. You know, it's so nerve wracking. And I walked out there, and it was a great buzz. Won the first frame, and I thought, oh, what's everyone talking about? You know, this is easy. And then that was it. I realised it ain't that easy. And I lost 10-1. Yeah, rabbit in the headlights.
But you're not alone in that. A lot of people. Yeah. We'll come on to your Crucible record later. But things turn around for you.
Yeah.
You then in 2007 you won the qualifier for the Masters, which obviously got you into the Masters. So that was a big deal, wasn't it?
It was a big deal. It wasn't at the time before that the qualifying event was like a sponsored by Benson and Edges, and that was a massive event in itself. It changed a little bit when I won it. It went to Prestatyn. There's still a load of great players in it. It was still a good tournament to win, and obviously to get to the what was it, Wembley Arena at the time. You know, I was buzzing. You know, so. To get there and play in that big arena was fantastic. And I think Ken might have beat me again there. He bashed me up a couple of times.
But it's all about experience, isn't it? You know, you're ticking the boxes. You get to semi-finals, you get to the Crucible, you win a tournament, you get to the Masters. You're still learning all the time, I guess.
Always. I'm learning now. I think you never stop learning. In Ronnie's prime example at the moment, he's always, even though how good he is, you know, you think there's not much more he can learn, and he's always striving for that perfection, you know. So you never stop learning in this game. I think there's always things that you think you can learn at. So but like you say, great experience, and it's just a massive learning curve in that age. It's all about getting that experience and keep building on it, and hopefully one day it'll turn around and you actually win something.
Well, things sort of turned around for you 2012. You won the Shootout, and obviously I mean, it's become a rank event, but then it was kind of a novelty sort of bash up, really. But it's still a very nervy event. And the fact that you won a trophy on television in that environment, that seemed to sort of kickstart your career.
Yeah, funny enough, it did actually. I know, as funny as mad as it sounds, it's like one frame. But like you say, being live on TV, in front of a big audience, quite raucous audience actually, and a lot of pressure. Everybody's twitching, you know, everyone's one frame, shot clock, so you've got quite a lot to deal with. I wouldn't class it, obviously now it's a ranking event, I don't think no one does, but... it was a big deal for me back then, because at the time, obviously, I was just hovering around the 32 mark, like 20 mark. I think I might have been in the 16 once by then. I wasn't really setting the world alight. And, at the time, lack of confidence I had. So, like, a win like that, picking up any trophy, I suppose, it did give me a lot of confidence, yeah.
And then you started the next season, you won your first ranked event, the Australian Open. What are your memories of that? That was out in Bendigo.
Yeah, well, I was back out. I think I'd been away for 3 or 4 weeks at the time. I was on the back of like the 6 reds in Thailand, a tournament in China, so I was on the road with Mark Davis most of the time, which is quite unfortunate. he's a good lad, yeah, but everyone knows how nice a fella he is, yeah, but he can be quite miserable sometimes. I remember being with him the whole time, and he'd had a great time. He'd been to the semis of China, and then he won the 6 red, so he was flying at the time, and he actually beat him in the semis of the Australian. So he had a great 3 or 4 weeks really, and I can remember playing Peter Ebdon in the final, and I played great, I think, if I remember rightly, and I remember potting the brown to win it, and obviously showed a bit of emotion, because it was a ranking tournament at the end of the day, and in front of TV and crowd there, it was a great feeling,
And he's gone into the match obviously with all the experience, you know, world champion, won a lot of tournaments. It's your first big final. Do you remember being nervous? Because you didn't seem to look it.
I was nervous, but I just, for some reason, it was just one of them days where everything just clicked really. You know, I'd obviously been working, I think I'd been working with Terry on a mind sort of thing really, and I just felt calm, and things were going right for me, and I was scoring well, and I felt confident, and it was just one of them games where everything just went well for me. You know?
Mm-hmm. Talk about Terry then, because obviously he's been world champion and a great player himself. Moving over to the coaching side, you don't always necessarily need to have been a great player to be a good coach, but he does have that experience to call on. But I get the sense, just talking to players, it's also about just the right word at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been working with Terry this season. Decided to have just a year on my own, you know, but there's no reason why I won't go back and work with him next year. But for the up to past 6 or 7 years I've been working with him, yeah, you're exactly right. I think the first couple of years we was always working on stuff, changed a couple of tiny little technical things, nothing major really. But yeah, he just seems, because he's been there and done it, people believe what he says. His other coaches haven't had that experience and they're pretending they know what they're talking about, but deep down really they haven't got a clue. But Terry's obviously been there, he knows exactly how you're feeling. And sometimes you go back in the dressing room, you wouldn't even talk about the game because everything's going well, so there's nothing to talk about. You just talk about completely something random and just make you laugh and make you relax, you know. So yeah, he's always great to have in your corner.
Okay, well, that season where you won the Australian Open, you actually played more matches than anyone else on the circuit, and of course it ended with the biggest match of them all. You got to the world final against Ronnie O'Sullivan. Now talk about the big time. I mean, that's about as big as it gets, right?
Yeah, that was amazing. I think I played, I beat Ding, Selby, and I think Selby was still struggling with his neck at the, or was he struggling with his neck at the time? I can't remember anyway, but yeah, yeah, I remember having like such a grueling game against Ricky.
Yeah.
And it was not a very good game either. I don't think I had a break over 50 until it went really late on in the match, and I was 12-8 down. Then all of a sudden I managed to find a bit of form and Ricky fell away a little bit, and I was 16-12 up. And then I remember potting the cash balls really to realise I was in the final. I was like, it was unbelievable really. It was a dream come true. And yeah, the best feeling I've ever had walking out as a professional, coming down for that final session against Ronnie, because I think we had a great game really. And I think a lot of people was expecting me just to fall away and he'd win with a session to spare and everything, but I think I put him under quite a bit of pressure, and I don't think he's played as well there, you know.
But what's it like playing in the final? Because like you mentioned the Jimmy White finals, and you've grown up watching, every snooker fan can remember all the world finals they've watched. Suddenly you're there, you know, they've got the trophy out, you're standing for the pictures. What's that
it's
like?
It's surreal. Yeah. It's surreal, really. You don't actually, I think when you're actually in at Sheffield and you're there working, it's weird. You don't seem to appreciate what's going on. Sure. I think you're just there, just concentrating, you're playing another game. There's so many sessions, just like non-stop. You just feel like you're not out of your suit. But yeah, standing there, I went to afterwards. I look back now and I look at the pictures and it brings back the memories, you know, and I think, Jesus, you actually played in the world final. You know, not many people can say that. Obviously, I'd have loved it if I'd have won it. But yeah, it's still a massive achievement. And I'll always look back with like unbelievable memories. Yeah.
And it must have helped give you the belief that, you know, you are a top player. You were sort of knocking on the door. You were steadily rising. Obviously, you'd won a ranking event that season. But to play in a world final, you know, that's not a fluke. And, obviously, since then, your record there has been really good.
Yeah.
Must have really helped with your confidence.
Oh, massively, yeah. Give me massive self-belief. Well, I wouldn't say massive, because I'm not that type of person who, you know, I'll always doubt myself. I'm always quite critical of myself. You know, I never get too excited about things. But, yeah, obviously, deep down, I know I can do it. That's the big thing, really. But, yeah, I'm not sure how I've done the following season. Maybe I took my foot off the brake, off the gas a little bit, maybe. I can't remember. But yeah, you know, deep down it gave me the confidence, and it actually cemented the fact that I can do it on a bigger stage. Yeah.
Quite often we hear people say about you, you know, you're underrated, which you shouldn't be. But is that a good thing in a way? You can sort of maybe keep your head down, leave some of the other star names to sort of take the limelight?
Yeah, people say things that I don't really take much notice. I'm not really interested in trying to make headlines and trying to say things just to get myself noticed and things like that. You know, I'll just go there, turn up, play. I'm there to play snooker and I'm there to try and win a tournament, really. If I can change people's minds, you know, and I mean, I don't think people doubt me. I think people class me as a top player, really. I don't really care what people think.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm just going there to play snooker, and if they think I'm a good player, then great, and if not, it's down to them, really. But I don't really take much notice.
Sure. Okay, well, you won the Players' Championship and then 2017 the World Grand Prix, and that was, you must have been really happy with that performance against Ryan Day. You know, 5 centuries. I know he came back at you a little bit at the end, but you've sort of done all the work early on.
Yeah, that's one of them moments where one of the rare occasions where you don't actually feel like you're going to miss, and to do feel like that in the final against a class player like Ryan, you know, so dangerous. Yeah, that was a great feeling. I remember walking around the tail and I was maybe 6-7-3 up, and I was clearing up, and I was thinking, Jesus, this is probably the best I've felt in a long time. And that don't happen very often. Every snooker player, I tell you. But like I say, he did come back at me, and I managed to make a decent little clearance in there under a lot of pressure. And yeah, that's a really proud moment, because I know I won the Australian, and I know, but that tournament was a big tournament, and everybody was in it. You sure. know, like Ronnie, the whole lot was in it. So to win that one was special, really.
Yeah, and of course, like any player, you don't just want to be consistent; you want to be winning the trophies.
Yeah, you want to win. Yeah, mm-hmm. not one since, but I've come close, very close, quite a few times. But yeah, that goes back a long way. I've got a lot of history, that tournament. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm delighted to have won that. Yeah.
You also got to the Masters final, I think, 3 years ago now, and again, Ronnie O'Sullivan, and that's kind of, that is sort of his manner, isn't it, the Ali Pally?
Yeah, I actually felt demoralised that final. That's one of the occasions where I did feel a bit embarrassed, you know. When it went 7-1, I think, I was actually thinking, just finish me off now, you know, there's no way back from there. Yeah. So, and then he fluked a pink, I think, to go 8-1, or it might have been to go 7-1, and I just thought, right, yeah, just bash me up now, please don't miss. It was one of the occasions where you don't actually want to come back to the table. Which is terrible, really, because you're in a massive final. But he can make you feel like that, and the place can make you feel like that as well, you know. So, but yeah, I played well. I played very well to get to the final, and yeah, another great occasion, but obviously not a great performance.
Well, the Crucible seems to be where you kind of every year you're there in the one table, and you obviously have to beat great players to do it.
Yeah.
Now, why is that, do you think? Is it the venue? Is it the longer matches? Or do you just feel comfortable there?
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't necessarily turn up there and think, right, I've got a great chance of getting through here, because I've been done well the last few years. I just turn up there the same every year, you know, hoping to get through the first round. And then it just, the way it's happened the last few years, it's just unfolded from there. And I think yeah, last year, actually, I felt like I could win this. Mm. And that's the first time, really. Even when I've got to the semis before, you know, I know how long the matches are, and I know the great players in front of me, but I did feel good, you know, and I was playing some decent stuff up until about 15-13 against Mark, and the wheels completely fell off. But yeah, I don't really turn up every year thinking, right, I'm going to have a good run here. It's just the way it's worked out the last few years. But like you say, I do feel quite comfortable there. Strange. Well, that's the biggest pressure any snooker player plays under, and for some reason it just seems to bring the best out of me. Well, it has done for the last few years. No reason I'm going to run this year.
Well, I was going to ask you about last year. I mean, was there sort of regret afterwards? Because, like you say, you were sort of in front against Mark,
yeah.
And then at the end it got very nervous, didn't it?
It was unbelievable. It must have been great to watch, because we couldn't stand up, a pair of us in the end. And then Mark, I remember missing the pink in the middle, and I played complete wrong shot. I only got to screw it down for a red on the black round. I'm trying to stun it off the cushion because I didn't fancy getting through the white. I remember, and he nudged me on the shoulder, and we just started laughing. He said, "Oh, we're both twitching all over the place now." And yeah, well, but I think looking back at it, there really, I probably should have just tried to stay focused a little bit more. But then I just started getting a little, it was strange, really, and should have tried to be a little bit more ruthless, really, maybe.
But how hard is
it? It's so hard when you're out there. You know, it's always good in hindsight, isn't it? You can always look back and go, "I should have done this, should have done this." But at the time, we was. Yeah, we were both struggling to string two balls together, I think.
Sure.
But yeah, like you say, I was gutted afterwards, definitely, because it was a great chance to get to another final, you know. Yeah, give me yourself a crack at the tile.
How hard is it, though? I know I've asked you about it now, but how hard is it not to look back on it, like certainly in the days afterward, when you sat at home and you think, if only I'd have done this?
Yeah.
Are you a player that can sort of let that stuff go, or occasion like that, is it difficult?
Yeah, no, I'm not too bad now. I don't beat myself up like I used to, no way near. But you know, I've been close quite a number of times now. You know, it's first couple of times you think, "Oh, that was a good tournament. That was a good tournament." But once you get there now, like the last few times, you don't want to keep getting beaten in them stages. You want to go on to win it. You know, you want to win a tournament, especially a tournament like that. So yeah, I did. It did hurt for a little while. Obviously, you got to bounce back. It's the way it is. But yeah, I don't. When I get to semis or something like that, you're devastated now. It's not. Whereas years ago, I'd get there and I'd think, "Oh, I've had a great tournament there," but it's not like that now. When you get through to that far, you want to win, don't you? Especially this stage of my career.
Well, the Masters, of course, is the big event coming up this week. I think you've got Sean Murphy first round. I suppose there, though, it doesn't really matter who you play, does it? Because they're all top players.
Oh, they're all great players. Murphy's won it. He's won a Triple Crown, world champion. So, yeah, I played him there a few years ago. I managed to beat him then, but you know, different day, different game, and looks like he's coming into a bit of form again. He's probably, he had a big move a while back. He went to move to Ireland, and he's he's probably settled down a bit now. It takes a little while to settle down, and he's been putting the hours in, and he's played very well the last month or so. Even in the qualifiers, I think he had about 7 or 8 centuries in these two matches. So, he'd have been putting the work in over Christmas, I'm sure. But yeah, like you say, it doesn't matter who you got there. You know what you got to do. You got to go out there and play well yourself. And if you can do that, then you're tough to beat, no?
Mm. You turned 40 this year, but that means nothing really in snooker, does it? We've seen a lot of 40-somethings actually really doing well.
Yeah.
How do you sort of see the next few years for you? Is it a question of trying to land a few more trophies?
Yeah, I think... Yeah, it'd be nice to win another. Well, another. Be nice to win another tournament at the moment. I'm not 1 month for a while, but I want to just try and just keep trying to play well and keep improving. Really, I think I've got quite a number of years left if I can stay dedicated. I think with me, I think if I can stay motivated, that's a big thing because I get a bit down with the travelling and that sometimes. I've been better the last few years, the last couple of years, I should say. But I think sometimes I get a bit depressed, really, you know, knowing that I've got to go away for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, especially like China and that, you know, I get a bit homesick, I suppose, like some other players, but I've dealt with that better lately, and if I can keep enjoying playing and keep doing all right, then I think I've got a few years left of me.
Because that's the thing, you mentioned the travelling a minute, it sort of sounds glamorous, but it isn't, is it? You know, it's airport, on the plane, another airport, bus to the hotel, and then you're working. You're not actually on holiday.
No, and then you're jet-lagged as well, and then you feel rubbish about yourself. You're sleeping rubbish. It takes a good week, you know, when you actually get to China to get over that. And sometimes you're only there, you're there for like 2-3 days, and then you've got a plane. And especially you get the 8:30 shift in the morning, and you can't get asleep till 6 in the morning when you're jet-lagged. So you're trying to play snooker, and your eyes are stinging, and you're thinking, oh, what am I doing here? So, I've been trying to get to China a bit earlier, you know, so I can start getting some more sleeping, and I think that's helped me, really. I think I've been getting over the jet lag a bit better. So, I mean, Ronnie's got it right, but he's in a privileged position where he can actually pick and choose not to go. So, for us boys, there's such big events, you don't want to really miss them.
Sure. And finally, just settle one thing, Barry, because I've heard it said about you a lot of times. You played the kettle drum in a steel band. Is this true?
The kettle, no, the cello it was called.
Okay.
The cello, yeah.
Cello like, drum.
Yeah, it's a cello it was called, okay. And I think the front was tenors, then there was seconds, the second row, which was like 2 drums, and I played the cello where there was three drums around me, you know, in a steel band, and then bass was behind me. So, we done weddings and everything, played at yacht clubs and... Yeah, it was really good at secondary school. Yeah, I've actually got some footage at home, so if I can dig it out somewhere, it's quite interesting.
How did you get into that?
Just at school, secondary school, and just in the music club, really. I got friendly with a few boys at the club, and they used to go at the weekends at Tobacco Dock in Wapping. Mm. We used to play in a shopping centre. We used to have like a lock up there, and every weekend on Saturdays and maybe Sunday sometimes, we used to play in a big shopping centre, and people would be all around watching and that. And we play all classical music, you know, like Blue Danube and all Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. I thought we was very good,
No, we haven't got a set here, but if someone wheeled them in, could you pick it up again, do you think?
No, I doubt it. I mean, I remember slightly, but nothing, I don't think I'll be able to. I used to be able to play the tenors as well and do a few things, but no, it's such a long time. 39 now, I was only 14 or so at the time, so I doubt it now.
Okay, well, you're busy enough playing snooker.
It's
been great to talk to you, Barry. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thanks.
Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.